This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. Governor Jim Justice is once again appealing to lawmakers to pass a tax reform plan that he says will help protect the state's poor and vulnerable. Yesterday, the governor held a press conference to share the concessions he says he's made with the proposal that aims to lower the state's personal income tax and increase the consumer sales tax rates. But Justice's plan is still largely the same as the one he's been backing for weeks. And as Ashton Morrow reports, the changes don't appear to have brought legislative leaders any closer to a deal.
I think it's incumbent on us all to take action. You know, this business of being down here on the taxpayer's dime is no good. It's just no good.
Governor Jim Justice sat at the head of a long table in his conference room Monday afternoon, surrounded by reporters and members of his staff. It's the same room that nearly 3 months ago Justice declared his budget war room, inviting members of the legislature to join him and his staff each morning to hammer out a deal. That deal still hasn't been reached, though, with less than 3 weeks until a potential government shutdown. Justice invited reporters into that conference room once again to explain that it was time for lawmakers to take action.
If we don't pass this, what I fear more than anything happening is just this, is there's going to be some level of carnage. If you don't pass this, there has to be some level of real hurt.
This, as Justice refers to it, is his revenue bill, his tax reform plan, his route to balancing the budget in 2018. The governor tweaked his proposal once again over the weekend, presenting it to House Speaker Tim Armstead and Senate President Mitch Carmichael Saturday morning, and members of the Democratic caucus in both chambers Monday afternoon. The proposal largely remains the same as the plan the governor has been pushing since the end of the regular legislative session in April. It would increase the consumer sales tax to 6.35% and broaden the base, as they like to say in the House of Delegates. That means getting rid of tax exemptions, imposing the sales tax on things like cell phones, gym memberships, and a number of purchases businesses make in the transportation and communication fields. The tweaked plan still includes changes to the personal income tax, notably to reduce the rate of taxation by 7% on January 1, 2018. Later reductions would kick in when the state meets some set of economic triggers. But it's the personal income tax reform that's caused the most tension between the House, Senate, and governor's office. Justice says he wants to ease some of that tension by getting rid of any income tax reduction for West Virginians who make more than $300,000 a year.
I have stood rock solid, steadfast in my belief wholeheartedly, and that is the wealthy need to pull the rope. They need to pull the rope more.
The governor has also embraced some of the House's previous positions on the tax reform plan, including exemptions for military retirement and some Social Security pay, and increasing the standard deduction on personal income taxes from $2,000 to $2,500 for households that make less than $50,000 a year. But while the plan has been altered slightly, it hasn't changed enough for some in the House. House Speaker Tim Armstead says the closer lawmakers get to their June 30th deadline, the less support there is in his caucus for the personal income tax changes.
I think he felt perhaps that that would bring people on board, and it may have some. I'm not certain. I don't know the numbers within the Democrat caucus. I don't think it moved the needle very much in our caucus.
During the press conference, Justice urged lawmakers to take action immediately on the new plan, but his plea came just as members of the Senate gaveled out for the day. Senate President Mitch Carmichael says, much like the governor, he wants to see a resolution as quickly as possible. But it's up to the House to come up with a final plan.
I think, and it should be widely known, that the House has trouble generating 51 votes for any plan.
The House has done more than cobble together 51 votes in favor of a revenue plan during this special legislative session, though. 3 weeks ago, the chamber voted 74-17 for a proposal negotiated between Democratic and Republican members. That plan included the veterans and Social Security tax exemptions and broadened the sales tax base, but was called a tax increase by Senate Republicans who want tax reform. They are defining that reform by changes to the personal income tax, even though Armstead says
that, I think, is the closest you're going to get to a tax reform in the House.
But the governor is still trying to sway Armstead's members, spending more than an hour with Republican delegates in a closed-door session Monday afternoon. Before that meeting, Justice said he is still willing to compromise, but only on things that won't hurt West Virginians.
If what we do is allow something to pass which hurts someone to gain politically, that is totally terrible. And we are capable in this building of doing those things. And I will not stand for it.
Armstead says he's still not in favor of the tax reform plan that's based on changing the personal income tax. But if enough members of his chamber on both sides of the aisle begin to support it, he wouldn't prevent it from being put to a vote. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Ashton Mara at the State House.
Lawmakers negotiating a compromise version of that tax reform plan will continue their work at the Capitol this morning, and both the House and Senate are scheduled to hold floor sessions throughout the day. You can watch those meetings live on the West Virginia Channel at 9 a.m. or streaming on our website, wvpublic.org. Narrative medicine is a relatively new approach to medical practice. Practitioners are asking patients for life stories, writing them down and adding them to the medical history. The idea is that getting to know patients more intimately through life narratives will improve medical providers' ability to care beyond simply managing symptoms and maybe improve patients' ability to heal or cope with illness. Kara Lofton reports.
I got my phone. You just call me when you need me, okay?
Okay. Thanks, Dad.
Lacey Lee Wallace is wearing a floral dress several sizes too big. Her skin is almost translucent, making the whimsical tattoos on her arms and chest pop more dramatically than they might if she were healthy.
I'm a 33-year-old woman that resides in Moundsville, West Virginia, and I've been going to WVU Hospital for treatment for my colon cancer, which is a stage 4 right now.
Lacey is also a mother of a 12-year-old and a toddler.
Here's your shoes.
I got my shoes.
Mm-hmm. What color are your shoes?
Pink.
Mm-hmm. Pink?
You want to show her the garden?
What's her garden?
Yes, please.
She was diagnosed last March with stage 3 colon cancer. By August, it had progressed to stage 4. None of the drugs doctors have tried have worked longer than a couple of weeks before the cancer mutated and the drugs stopped working.
More doctors, more appointments, you know, more drugs, like scary stuff.
Lacey is a multimedia artist who works mostly with paper, creating collages or art you have to interact with, as she describes it.
We want to be feeling like we're important. We want somebody to want to hear our story, like that we have that need as humans to, like, you know, convey stuff to other people. We want to communicate on a higher level. And I think that, you know, the arts let you take it a step beyond just words. You know, you get to go into something, you get to see something and be a part of it. I tend to make a lot of interactive art, where the person can't see the artwork unless they interact with the piece. And I like that because it's like always before, it's like, don't touch my art. But I like to make them have to touch the art or they don't get to see it. Like then you don't get to be a part of it if you're not going to participate. And that's fine if you don't want to participate, but it's here if you want to. And I think, you know, like art is therapy in that way. And same with the storytelling, you know, it builds us up. You know, and even if it's just for one day or 1 minute or 1 hour, you feel empowered because somebody is listening and actually caring about your story.
So for her, the narrative medicine program being conducted by Dr. Carl Gray and creative writing professor Renee Nicholson was a natural fit.
I do something called advanced care planning.
Dr. Gray is a geriatrician and a hospice doctor who focuses mostly on easing patients' symptoms toward the end of life, practicing what's called palliative care.
And if you read about advanced care planning, boiling it down to its essential, it is talking to patients about what they would want if something happens to them and they're not able to make decisions for themselves, especially when they're very sick.
But patients don't always fill out advanced care forms, even though they can make the difference between dying in a hospital or dying at home, or having CPR performed or not. Gray thinks part of the problem is that advanced care planning forms, called advanced directives, don't include space for narratives.
So you can look at this advanced directive and see that they have this wish or that wish, but they usually just mean whether or not they want CPR, but you don't have any idea of what the context of the story was. So again, I thought that maybe getting a story could be helpful with that.
There's also some evidence, he says, that doing writing with patients can help with quality of life.
But being somebody who works in palliative care, I care a lot about quality of life. That's what I'm always striving to improve in patients.
So when Gray met Renee Nicholson, a creative writing professor at West Virginia University, the two of them decided to work together to write grant proposals for a clinical trial of narrative medicine. The project was funded, and Nicholson began collecting patient stories last August.
Our goal is to have them talk about whatever they want.
The stories are taken orally, then transcribed and lightly edited into prose. A final version becomes part of the patient's medical history.
It's really, what they think is important about their life that they want to share and talk about. That's what we're really hoping to do.
Lacey loves that.
Now, some people chose to discuss their cancer and when they got diagnosed and how it changed their life. And I decided instead of talking just about my cancer, which is like more of a side note to like my life, not, the main chapter, So I just started off telling her about memories that make me happy. And one of the best memories that I have and things that I do that inspire me is be a model for other artists.
Lacey says when she sits as a model for other artists, she makes sure to dress up in colorful clothes or dramatic makeup to give them something interesting to work with. It's humbling, she says, to see yourself in the eyes of another. Nicholson says reflecting on life is the whole point. When you do that, you come to learn what's important to you, and deciding what you want at the end of your life might be a little easier. She says it can also help you connect with loved ones or distract you from the painful monotony that is cancer treatment.
What we try to do is see if there's any correlation between the patient's quality of life, and we use a survey that's well known and well used called the McGill Quality of Life Survey. And we measure both when we go in to take the story and after we return the stories to see if there's any change in quality of life. And then we ask some questions about the patient's preparedness to do things like advanced care planning and their understanding of it, and would they be comfortable talking to their doctor or their health professional. And then we also ask them after they've received their story if doing a story was a pleasurable experience for them, and if it helped them feel more prepared to have some of those conversations.
The project is still pretty new, so they don't have a lot of definitive data yet. But Nicholson says anecdotally it's showing a lot of promise. I asked her if she thought it was sustainable. Gathering stories takes a lot of time. And as anyone who has spent extended time in the hospital knows, doctors don't have a lot of time to spend with patients. She says she's honestly not sure, but hopes so. Story is an important part of care.
I think for the doctors, it gives them a different view of the patients. One of the things that Dr. Gray shared with me very early on was, I just didn't know that the stories were going to be so beautiful. And that really struck me, because I always expect people's personal stories to be beautiful. I think people lead much more extraordinary lives than they think. So that was interesting and kind of very compelling as far as medicine, because you get a certain story in medicine, but you don't always get a total one. Patients themselves get excited, and I think that there's something validating about seeing your own story on a piece of paper.
But on some level, Nicholson says, the story gathering is just about having something different and unique going on in a situation that is pretty tough. The story, she says, allows participants to escape into the self they were before their diagnosis. Nicholson and Gray hope to complete their study in July of 2018. Nicholson says if her approach to narrative medicine improves health outcomes for cancer patients, she'd like to expand the project to other groups of patients struggling with long hospital stays. But that, she says, is a little ways off. For Appalachia Health News, I'm Carol Lofton.
Appalachia Health News is a project of West Virginia Public Broadcasting with support from the Ben Adam Foundation, Charleston Area Medical Center, and WVU Medicine. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Our producer is Ashton Mara. I'm Teresa Wills.